How do you make decisions? If you're a modern leader, you probably rely on data. That's the rational thing to do, of course, and these days, there's plenty of data around to help you steer the ship. In fact, there might be too much data around. And the best leaders seem to be the ones who take in objective information and balance it with other, more human instincts. That's the argument in Decisions Over Decimals, Striking the Balance Between Intuition and Information, a new book by Christopher Frank, Paul Magnoni, and Oded Netzer. Christopher, Paul, and Oded are seasoned executives and highly regarded educators, and to help you make better decisions in your own business, they offer an approach that they call quantitative intuition. Here they are to explain.
Decisions Over Decimals, Striking the Balance Between Intuition and Information, by Christopher Frank, Vice President of Global Marketplace Insights at American Express and Faculty Co-Director at Columbia Business School, Paul Magnoni, Head of Global Strategic Alliances at Google and Faculty Co-Director at Columbia Business School, and Oded Netzer, Vice Dean of Research and the Arthur J. Sandberg Professor of Business at Columbia Business School and an Amazon Scholar. Our book bites will describe 5 points. Why do people struggle with decision-making? How to effectively frame a problem? The importance of putting data in context? How to synthesize rather than summarize? And how to navigate a decision along the dimensions of time, risk, and trust.
Why do people struggle with decision-making? A decision represents a change, that moment in time when you are asked to consider a different path. As individuals, we are not wired for change. Organizations do not resist change. People do. This resistance weighs heavily on the decision-making process. Teams make slow decisions, misguided decisions, and sometimes no decisions. Why is this a struggle? At the core is fear. People are afraid of casting a decision that's not right, not smart, or making a choice that's not perfect. We fear that if we make an imperfect decision, it will impact our personal brand, our performance rating, our next project, or even a job opportunity. So we seek the perfect decision and often retreat to our comfort zones, some to data and others to intuition. This is counterproductive to agile decision-making, yet we deceive ourselves, hoping to obtain certainty. The perfect decision is a myth. As we request more information, seek one more opinion, or ask for another spreadsheet, we end up with countless meetings and streams of additional data or slideware. And so, we prolong the decision process. Too frequently, we find ourselves spinning. The discussion becomes a debate, and the decision process drags on, sapping our energy. The solution is to strike the balance between information and judgment. We call this quantitative intuition. How to effectively frame the problem. Agile decision-making is grounded in how you think, not how hard you work. When a new project launches, without proper framing, team members often pounce. Activity is confused with impact. People jump into meetings, emails churn, and data is pulled, tormented, and abused. At the end, everyone is fatigued and there may be a good decision, a poor decision, or no decision. The smarter approach is to have the right team match the decision moment, focused on answering the essential question. The goal is to reach the minimal viable decision rather than chasing the unachievable perfect decision. That means ensuring the team only collects the necessary data to balance their intuition, which starts with pinpointing the essential question. Defining the essential question is deceptively simple. Ask, "What do I wish I knew?" The output is a series of statements, all beginning with "I wish I knew," or IWICs, as we refer to them. IWIC acts as a catalyst to bring clarity to an issue. The IWIC statements your colleagues or clients generate lead to a deeper understanding of their actual needs. IWICs enable you to determine the questions you need to answer during the research or analysis phase. You discover the unique needs of various stakeholders and create alignment between the effort, the outcome, and the decision. The key to this IWIC framing technique is the word wish, which grants permission for open exploration and not simply rehashing what is known. There are four parts to the IWIC process: ask, brainstorm, capture, and deliberate. The IWIC approach leads to uncovering the underlying questions, which can expose the root cause of the situation that needs to be solved. IWICs enable you to focus on the essential question and prioritize your team's data discovery, analysis, and delivery efforts, leading to efficient and effective decisions.
The importance of putting data in context. Ask, what surprised you? The abundance of data has led to the illusion that with so much data, we will have the perfect data, and with it, the perfect decision. We will finally get to the nirvana of certainty, removing all uncertainty from the decision-making process. This is a myth. The certain decision, the perfect decision, doesn't exist. We hoped that with the arrival of big data, capital B, capital D, we will get rid of gut decision-making, with all of the biases that often come with intuitive decision-making. Now that the dust has settled on the buzz of big data, we realize that, on the one hand, data is a reality, and it is of tremendous value for decision-making. But on the other hand, uncertainty and the need for human judgment still remains. Intuition still plays a huge role in decision-making, but it is a different type of intuition than maybe the one we used when we didn't have much data. We call this type of intuition quantitative intuition, or in short, QI. At the heart of the QI skills is the ability to ask precise questions, to interrogate the data from the business perspective by putting the data in the context of the business, synthesize the information to make good decision, and finally, deliver the decision to compel action. We tend to think that good data interrogators are those skilled in statistics, those who can check if the analyst used maybe this or the other three-letter acronym shiniest tool. This is, again, a myth. The main skill needed to interrogate data is not a technical one. It involves putting the data in the context of the business. To put the data in the context, you must always triangulate it by looking at it in first absolute terms, second over time, and third relative to what's going on elsewhere. This knowledge and the ability to interrogate data from that contextual perspective rarely sits within the data science team. It is often within the business units or top management. One of the tools we put forward in the book is a deceptively simple question to advance our data interrogation. Ask, what surprised you? By definition, a surprise is a combination of information and intuition. It is what happens when the information doesn't match your priors or your intuition. Statisticians tend to call these surprises outliers and dismiss them. But these surprises are often at the heart of the story. Don't dismiss them. These surprises are exactly where you should focus your interrogation. When an analyst comes to me after 2 weeks of number crunching with a deck of slides full of tables, I tell them, I promise, we will look at your slides, but before we do that, tell me one or two things that surprised you in your journey through the data. You will be surprised how this one question helps cut straight to the chase and uncover interesting insights. Yes, and sometimes also important mistakes. It is exactly at these points of surprise that the magic of meaningful insights occurs. Synthesize, do not summarize. So you've got all of your data and analysis done and even gained a few insights. Now what? This is a time for synthesis. Synthesis is the combination of data and judgment. It is a transition from analysis to recommendation by adding human judgment and putting the analysis in the context of the environment. It is the ability to connect the dots and synthesize the information rather than merely summarizing it, rather than merely reporting back exactly the same information that we can already see in the figure or the table. Consider, for example, a resident in an ER room in a hospital. The resident is learning to become a doctor. She accepts the patient, does all of the tests and the vitals, and then she goes to the attending physician, to the expert, and reports the vitals, the test, without providing any diagnosis. This is an example of a summary as opposed to a synthesis. A skilled attending physician, even within the commotion of the ER room, would turn back to the resident and say, "You spent the last 20 minutes with the patient. This is the first time that I'm actually seeing the patient. What do you think they have?" They would encourage the resident to provide a diagnosis, a synthesis. We should do the same with our analysts, encouraging them to synthesize as opposed to just summarize. This set of skills, learning to synthesize, is extremely important and tend to be missing, particularly among junior employees. Unfortunately, This skill of pouring judgment into the analysis and data is rarely taught in any data or analysis type courses. In organizations, we spend hours in meeting discussing the what aspects of the data. What does the data tell us? Is it accurate? Can we get more data? Can we get different data? We are often persuaded by what we call in the book, the CMOs in the organization. Those are people who in every single meeting ask only for one thing. Can I see more data? Synthesis is the process of moving beyond the what, of moving towards the so what. What does this whole thing mean for us? And now what? What are we going to do about it? Make sure to make time and space to discuss the so what and the now what informed by the data.
The decision moment. One reason why we tend to make misguided decisions is that we're not considering all the variables that are relevant. We lack a frame for our decision making to help us quickly consider underlying factors that are likely to be of importance. A decision should be based on your data insights plus your human judgment, not on the pressures of time, fatigue, bias, or sheer organizational momentum that we often defer to in business. We can build a simple framework containing the main forces that shape and influence that decision moment, the elements of time, risk, and trust. Do we have a tight time frame forcing a swift decision? Is the time period fixed or flexible? Answers to this define the constraints on data, discovery, and the range of questions that can be explored. In considering risk, is it low or high risk? Is the decision situational, relating to a defined problem, or potentially have a broader impact on reputation or brand? Finally, is the information trustworthy? How about the individual or organization bringing that information forward? Does the messenger have a track record of insightful synthesis, or are they simply passing on raw data? The stakeholder navigating a decision triangulates time, risk, and trust, and may look to comparables in adjacent spaces. They will also consider reversibility. Is a decision permanent, or is there future flexibility possible? The confident decision maker recognizes that with or without perfect data, a decision needs to be made, so they will focus on being approximately right rather than burning resources and becoming precisely wrong.
Thank you. That was 5 big ideas from Decisions Over Decimals, Striking the Balance Between Intuition and Information by Christopher Frank, Paul Magnoni, and Oded Netzer. For some ideas on how to skillfully use data in your personal life, check out Don't Trust Your Gut, Using Data to Get What You Really Want in Life by Seth Stevens Davidowitz. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.